We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Craig Calcaterra, writer and editor of the daily baseball newsletter, Cup of Coffee.
Are you going to pay Anthony Rizzo for what he was rather than what he's going to be? And just, you know, if you're going to do this, how big do you go if you are going to try to sow the seeds of the next truly competitive phase?
I think if you're the Cubs management right now, you go big. They've already taken the big PR hit for this. You know, if ownership has your back on, I want to burn this down, please give me 5-6 years to bring it back up again.
They have your back. Because they don't want to spend money. They just want to keep as much money as possible. That's an easy
one. Exactly. If you had a Mike Ilitch type owner of the Tigers, if you had a George Steinbrenner, if you had somebody who really wants to win, this would be a bad situation for you to be the GM right now. But if you're the Ricketts family and this is just a line item in your empire and you're totally fine with it going as low as you can possibly make it, then you burn the thing down.
Bernstein and Rahimi, middays, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score.
Craig Calcaterra is brought to you by Lakeside Bank, where every client has their own banker. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, at apnissan.com. And as always, you can check him out on our Twitch stream, and that is at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Craig Calcaterra, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not on the Twitch today because I just didn't have time to put my face on.
Ah, I see. So, yeah, you're the extensive TV makeup that you you often do. I noticed that
you can't look like this for without effort, Dan. You can't look like this without effort.
In today's Cup of Coffee newsletter, you sort of did the critique the critic exercise that we English majors all remember, and looking at the expansive piece that ESPN and their platforms did about sort of the state of baseball. And I enjoyed the fact that you, as an independent journalist, were concerned about what they didn't address. There's all the obvious stuff about, you know, carrying water and for the management and the labor negotiations and pace of play and the ball and the strikeouts and everything else. But what was noticeable to you, noticeably absent from that kind of coverage?
The two things. The one you just mentioned is they mentioned absolutely nothing that might reflect poorly on baseball's ownership or leadership, whether it's revenues, whether it's management, things like that. I guess that goes without saying at this point. If you're a big partner of Major League Baseball, you're not going to say things that are going to upset Rob Manfred, and that's a huge hole there. But really significant, and this is significant across baseball media, I think, is there isn't any mention of the place of women in baseball, the lack of representation of women, of people of color, of LGBTQ plus community, sexual harassment and sexual abuse, which right now is a huge issue in baseball. There are multiple investigations going on of multiple figures in the game. And, is that something that is going to move the needle for ESPN readers? Probably not. I understand that not everybody wants to hear about that kind of stuff. But if you're going to take the position that you need to talk about every single issue in baseball and you're going to spend the entire summer doing it, which is what ESPN is promising to do, you need to talk about these sorts of things because it's a big, big issue. We've got a pitching coach in Anaheim right now who has been under investigation and is on suspension for harassment. A broadcaster for the Washington Nationals, a former player, is on suspension for harassment, suspected harassment. We've had a number of these sorts of things going lately about the safety of the workplace, about the welcomeness of women in the workplace in baseball. And that's something I think that needs to be addressed.
We also know that the overriding story so far is this awareness, even this early, that this could be the worst offensive season since the famed year of the pitcher in 1968. You know, already the four no-hitters, not even counting Madison Bumgarner's. This number absolutely blew my mind when I saw this. And this was in the... Where did I find this? This was written by a columnist named Jim Alexander of the Press Enterprise. That this year, we focus on that .234 collective batting average. There are 7.75 hits per game. It is the first time below 8 hits per game since, you care to guess, a year?
I'm going to guess, you know, like 1917.
1909.
Wow.
It is the first time under 8 hits per game since 1909. Since the guys had, you know, their hands apart on the bat. I mean, this is, it's just incredible. I'm seeing with 9 strikeouts at an all-time high, the fourth straight season, strikeouts outpace hits, and the margins increased. To me, Craig, as for those of us who have been reading and hearing people sounding alarms for years here, you know, Joe Sheehan's been talking about this since 2014, that it's like climate change. It's too late now. There was a time when we had this sort of inconvenient truth of all this, and it's like what Layla often calls the boiled frog situation. You know, you don't... If the temperature's slowly going up, you don't know until you're already boiled, and we be boiled here.
Oh yeah, it's off the charts, and it's worse than 1968 because, you know, we had hits in 1968. We didn't have any power, but we at least had balls in play. We had hits. We had defense, which is an exciting sort of thing to watch on some level, even if it's at a low level like it was in 1968. But our three true outcome situation here, where everybody is striking out, walking, or hitting home runs, and that's where the majority of the runs are coming from, unless you're facing the Cubs, then you get all your runs on errors. But that's another story. The notion that there's just nothing happening in baseball is really, really bad for the sport. That 7-hit figure is incredible to me. I mean, the entire reason you watch baseball is to see someone hit the ball. And, you know, maybe they don't win and maybe they don't score runs because there's good defense, but we're not even giving the good defenses a chance to play. It's really bad. And Major League Baseball's approach has been, you know, deadening the ball or not deadening the ball or livelying up the ball and everything. And that, again, has effects on home runs, but it doesn't get to the core problem, which is a lack of balls in play.
And the pitching just being too nasty. They're too damn good.
Yeah.
They're
throwing a million miles per hour. It's not hittable. And then the strike zone situation, I think, I've talked about this before, I think it's a huge contributor here. We used to see wider strikes. And ever since umpires started being judged electronically on how their call at the strike zone is, they're calling narrower strikes but higher and lower ones for a bunch of technological reasons. And those are harder to put in play than something on the outside or something that you fist off on the inside. And so that's contributing to it as well.
Yeah, for years, Steve Stone, who was a former curveballer, always talked about how unfair it was that they never called the high curve for a strike. You know what? They are now. They all the time now. That now you're seeing curves that are dropping into the top of the three-dimensional zone actually being called strikes. And on one level, that's fair. That's just. But it's a really hard pitch to hit.
And it's going to get worse the more technology ramps up, because generally strikes and balls throughout baseball history have been called sort of on a two-dimensional strike zone. The way you watch it on TV, you see up, down, left, right, but a flat plane as it crosses the plate. If you do electronic umpiring, which they're going to start doing and they're experimenting with in the minor leagues, it suddenly becomes a cube because it's the entire width of the plate, right? And you can drop something, some breaking pitch or some cut fastball that just barely nicks the back of the strike zone, mm-hmm. You know, the very, very back of the plate. And that's a pitch now that no one has to contend with except for occasionally these very obvious big looping curveballs. It's going to get really bad if they don't do something.
Cubs are at a level 17-17, 3.5 games by the Cardinals, who find themselves 21-14. How good are the Cardinals?
Not that good, I don't think. I mean, no one in the NL Central impresses me a great deal. I think the Cardinals are the most talented team, so it doesn't surprise me that they're in first place. I'm a little surprised. They've gotten some really good pitching performances lately. I mean, Adam Wainwright, obviously he's a good pitcher. He's one of the best pitchers of his generation, but he's certainly on the back end of things, and he's looked very, very good lately. I think he's taking advantage of some of this very low hit environment more than some others are. I think they're going to have some problems with their bullpen as the season goes on, but they're not a flawed team, the sort that the Cubs can just sort of wait around, or the Brewers or anybody else could just sort of wait around to falter. I think they're going to be an above 500 team, which in the NL Central this year is going to get it done. I think you don't have to be too far above 500, I think, to be a playoff team out of this division.
Everybody in the National League, particularly in the East, is looking at the situation with Jacob DeGrom as he goes on the 10-day IL with what is being called stiffness. And they say that all of the diagnostics came up clean. Yet, this is the Mets. And I don't generally know what to trust. I don't know if the people who handle the injuries there necessarily have known what they've been doing. And they get weird injuries there, or they get a guy attacked by tsetse flies, or strange things happen. So until everything is actually okay with DeGrom, I'm going to assume it's not, because throwing that many 100-mile-an-hour pitches is just not good for the human body.
He is probably the hardest thrower in baseball, and if it doesn't get borne out in velocity, which it usually does, he's right up there. It certainly is an effort, too. He looks effortless, but there's a huge amount of power and torque in his delivery compared to a lot of other guys. People who are smarter than me, people like Eno Saris, and who analyze pitching mechanics, have talked about that with him. So it doesn't surprise me that he's hurt. It surprised me that it took this long. But it doesn't surprise me that he's hurt. Your point on the Mets, though, is great. It wouldn't shock me if he had, beriberi or dropsy or something like this at this point. They do have a very poor track
record. Case of the vapors, yeah.
Yeah, the first thing is you go to the injured list. The second thing is you go to the fainting couch when you're with the New York Mets. They have new ownership. They have new management and stuff, but they have not had a full overhaul of their training and their medical. I haven't had the chance to really yet. And there are some very, very understandable questions and reservations to be had about how they're handling injuries. He had 10 days off with that skip start, and he 5 innings into that skip start, he had the problem recur. He's now on the injured list for 10 days. It's not going to be any different than when he was skipped. Just gives the Mets another pitcher to deal with. I don't know, man. I'd love to see him miss a little bit more time than that. He's going to be too important to that team to mess with in May and June. They're going to need him in September and October.
We've been talking about the conundrum that is 2021 Yasmani Grandal on the White Sox, who's an immensely important player. And in a lot of ways, as a free agent acquisition, he's symbolic of their desire to win now when they made that move. What a weird year. He's batting 113. With a batting average of balls in play of 119, he's at a 378 on base percentage, slugging 242, and actually, he is a 102 weighted runs created plus. So he's better than an average offensive player despite batting 113. We know he's a defensive plus, and he has been. He's been worth nearly half a win already this season. What do you do here? Do you just kind of let him be and know that things are inevitably going to snap back? Or do you tell him, you're seeing the ball fine, you may want to swing the bat a little bit?
I think that batting averages on balls in play figure that you mentioned is great evidence for just leave him alone. He's done this before. He was like this in Los Angeles. He was like this early in his career in San Diego. He has these really horrible streaks that sort of just crater on offense situations, and then he comes back. I don't think you mess with him. I mean, obviously for the defense alone, right? Yeah, that's the one thing. You can carry a catcher who's not hitting. If he was, a first baseman, if this was Abreu going through it right now, maybe you get a little more worried. But I think you leave him back there. You figure that this is some really fluky balls in play stuff. The power is a little bit concerning, obviously. You figure that once in a while he's going to get a hold of one. But he's taking his walks, getting on for the other hitters, I think you just sort of ride it out for another month and see where you are.
Last thing, I was really glad in today's newsletter that you addressed that wonderful piece in The Ringer about the rock band The Eagles. And I read it. I read it, and I sent it to a lot of my friends. Because there's always been something about them. And I fully admit I like a lot of their music. And it's catchy, and it comes on the classic rock radio, or it's on in the store or wherever. And I like it, and I sing along to it, and there's a lot of good songs. I've always found something that I couldn't put my finger on that made them off-putting. And what The Ringer did was identify exactly what that sense was that I had. They're just kind of a-holes.
Exactly. So there are two or three levels with the Eagles. The one is there are a lot of people that just reflexively hate them because they heard the Big Lebowski say he hates the Eagles, and so they do. And that's not fair, I think. I'm like you. I'm not a huge fan of them, but I grew up listening to that stuff. They have some pretty good ditties, and you can just let it wash over you, and it's fine. The second level is the hardcore critical. Here's how they weren't truly the progenitors of country rock, and Graham Parsons should have gotten their album sales. Who cares? No one cares about that stuff except rock critic types. But the idea that, man, something's just off about them, and they're just kind of jerks, that comes through. And where it came through the most, they had that, like, three-hour documentary a few years ago. It was, like, History of the Eagles or something like that. It was fantastic to watch, even if you hate them, maybe especially if you hate them, because they're all speaking for themselves, and you're like, wow, you know, maybe it is unfair, a lot of the criticism you get, but I've just listened to you talk for 2 hours, Don Henley, and you're a giant a-hole.
And how thin-skinned, too, how petty and thin-skinned they were. You'd think you're on top of the world. You're probably the number one American rock group, and they were just so unhappy all the time.
Exactly. It was like they could sell 10 million copies, and if they were, like, number two in Luxembourg or something, they got really crappy about it. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, the only thing that reminded me of this, because it always bothered me as a big fan of The Police, that Stuart Copeland and Sting never got along. And I'm like, well, why? You know, they're both kind of geniuses in their own regard, and they've made wonderful music, however this has worked. And then they did, there was a documentary that they did, and I think maybe it was on Bravo, and it was like a sort of a residency. And after that, I totally get it, and I'm totally with Sting now, that Stuart Copeland is a wonderful drummer. I would have strangled him at some point, because there's no way I could come to work and just have that there all the time.
We all have had, you know, sort of jackass coworkers before, but when you think about being in a 3-man or a 5-man rock band, and you're in the plane and in the hotel, I mean, you know, it's rock cliche, and they're big and rich and all that kind of stuff. But when you have close quarters with someone like that all the time, and everything depends on you guys acting like you're a group, and you're not, man, that's got to be hard.
It's the one kid in your cabin at overnight camp that ruins everything. We've all been there.
We'll let Joe Walsh off the hook because he seems like a pretty decent dude, but the rest of them in the Eagles are all that kid in the camp.
Yep, it's the one kid that ruins your summer. Anyway, love the stuff, and I urge everyone to make Cup of Coffee, the newsletter via Substack, the way they start their baseball day, in large part because of the non-baseball stuff that I think is important out there. And there aren't a whole lot of places that bring all that stuff on a consistent level. So, Craig, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
That is Craig Calcaterra. Next up, Brian Geltzeiler talks the Bulls and NBA. We're getting close to playoff time. We're getting close to this play-in tournament. We'll get a full reset on everything that is happening on the hardwood. Next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. The Bernstein and Rahimi Show.
Russell Westbrook has turned into an absolute monster. He doesn't age. Russell Westbrook is becoming like an absolute all-time great basketball player.
The fadeaway, and there it is. History. Russell Westbrook has just surpassed Oscar Robertson. It lasted 47 years, and now Russell Westbrook stands there all alone.
A record that was titled untouchable for 47 years has been broken. Congratulations, Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook did something that nobody thought was possible. He's been described as not human. Well, he's now the all-time triple-double leader with 182. The Wizards players applaud, fans applaud, and there's Russell Westbrook looking up. He did it.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show, middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Absolutely crazy to think Russell Westbrook now has more triple-doubles than Kobe Bryant had doubles. Incredible. Here to talk about that and more is one of our favorite basketball voices. He is Brian Geltzeiler. You can find him on Twitter at Hoops Critic. You can also enjoy his work at Sirius XM, NBA Radio. He is on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. Geltzy, how are you, man?
I'm good. How we doing, guys?
You know, all of a sudden, the Bulls are playing some of their best, most cohesive basketball of the season at a time where I would kind of prefer that they tank and try to do their best to hold on to that top four protected pick. But no, they're going after this 4.7% chance of being in the fake playoffs.
Yeah, I think there's a bigger picture here, Dan, and I think it's culture building. I think what you made a trade that was a now trade for a team that, if we're being frank about it, may not be a now team. So you sacrifice two first round picks, and listen, I had no issue with you trading Wendell Carter. I had described Wendell Carter to you guys a few months back as one of these not enough guys. Mm-hmm. He's not fast enough. He's not strong enough. He's not big enough. He'll be a decent pro, but he's not going to be a guy that you're going to, look back and regret trading. But listen, two first-round picks matter. And when you're a team like the Bulls that has got a new regime in there trying to put their own stamp on this thing, and you're struggling to retain value of assets that have been there before you got there, your own first matter. So I get what's happening here. They're more concerned about having momentum going into next year than retaining that draft pick. You can argue with that logic all you want, but that's their primary concern. Listen, they didn't have to bring Zach LaVine back here for the last handful of games. They've chosen to do that, and they've chosen to do that because I think they want to be able to kind of prove a point that this can be a team that's a playoff team next year and get it moving in that direction. So this is a lot of culture building, and frankly, for prospective free agents and other players out there, a little bit of window dressing also for mm-hmm. what the Bulls are doing.
I didn't think I'd be asking this question, but how important is it, do you think, that they re-sign Daniel Theis?
I don't think it's urgent just because of the depth at that position. I don't think it's urgent because they got him for next to nothing. With that said, wouldn't you want Daniel Theis on your team? Mm-hmm. I'd want him on my team if you can get him for a reasonable number. Guy's a grinder. And for what you have up front, what I like about him is you bring him off the bench to spell Vucevic or at times play with Vucevic, and it's just a different skill set. He's a scrapper. Is he overly big for a center? He's not, but he does everything in his power to not be physically overwhelmed. The guy's got guts. He knocks down corner threes. He'll block shots here and there. He's an effective rebounder, very active defensively not necessarily rim protection as much as pick and roll, but he's a multifaceted player. And in the words of Ted Knight from the movie Caddyshack, Dan, the world needs ditch diggers too. This is a ditch digger. That's who this guy is. So, again, I'd love to see them re-sign him. It's got to be at the right number. By the same token, if it's not at the right number, you move on. You got him for next to nothing. You pretty much got him because you were willing to pay him, and the Celtics didn't want to pay him anymore.
Looking at the playoff picture and thinking about some of these key injuries that came mid-season, late season, whether it's Jamal Murray, Jaylen Brown, these critically important players to really good teams, there's got to be some sense of irony that Joel Embiid is not one of these guys, that a healthy Joel Embiid who's at the absolute top of his game is leading the 76ers exactly as the process was once trusted.
Listen, Dad, timing's everything in life. He had his injury already and came back from it. And they've been careful with him. As much as Doc Rivers wants to push him for the MVP, they have not made that a priority either, in terms of how they've played him and they've had him pick his spots. And you get, they've had a lot of blowouts recently too in an easy schedule. So there's nights and beats playing 23 minutes and it's kind of a half a night off for them. But keep in mind, he had his injury already. He went through that. So, yeah, there's a lot of irony involved there. But I think, listen, when it comes to injuries this year with players, timing is everything. These injuries that are happening late in the year can be devastating to certain teams. I mean, listen, Utah's in danger of losing the one seed because of his Donovan Mitchell injury. Is he going to come back in time to be able to play himself back into shape? And they may very well draw a get hot as a pistol Steph Curry and the Warriors in the first round. What if they don't get the one seed? And they draw the Lakers with LeBron coming back. you know, you mentioned Jamal Murray. That's been certainly a very tough injury situation. I don't know that Boston was going anywhere with Jaylen Brown this year. I think there's a lot of things that are fundamentally wrong with that program right now, starting with the head coach extended for a handful of years here, and I think they need a different voice. I think they got to get Marcus Smart out of there. For years of being a good citizen with them, he's all of a sudden, to my understanding, becoming a major problem for Brad Stevens on the court and in the locker room. There's a lot of messy things going on with the Celtics, so I think Jaylen Brown kind of gives them their smoking gun to not have success in the playoffs. That probably wasn't happening either. But listen, the injuries are huge. Is Brooklyn going to get James Harden back in time, that he's going to be able to play himself into the proper shape that he's going to need to pretty much be back on the floor? That's why the two teams you have to look at, to me, that are very interesting is Milwaukee in the East. I know they haven't been good lately, and last night they got crushed by San Antonio. But Milwaukee is a healthy team with all their guys. And then the other one is the Clippers. Now, don't get me wrong, the Clippers are missing Serge Ibaka, and that's a huge problem for them, and they got to hope to get him back for the playoffs. But you compare them to what's happening with everybody else in the West, short of Phoenix, the Clippers are probably the healthiest there also. So this has been a year where attrition has been the name of the game. Guys wearing down because of the schedule, and the schedule has been brutal. And now we're about to come to an end. And I think, you know, some of it's affected the quality of play too, Dan. And I think I'm excited for the playoffs here just because I want to see the quality of play be ratcheted up with no more back-to-backs.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say the Knicks in there because, man, I'll tell you something. They're a bitch to play. They just, you talk about a Tom Thibodeau team that is still in, if you want to call the honeymoon period, you know, we know that sometimes he wears on you and it becomes a difficult life in the NBA to play for him. But God, just the relentless defensive pick and roll just wears on you. You can't get an angle. You know, it's so hard to just get a release from their relentless ball screen defense.
Well, yes, and this has been a perfect team for him to coach because there's something that I think players miss a point with Tom Thibodeau. He gets guys paid. He gets guys contracts because he gets the most out of them. He gets them in the best condition of their career. He puts them in roles where they can succeed, and the Knicks are loaded with guys on one-year deals waiting to get paid. You know, Reggie Bullock, this is what everybody thought Reggie Bullock could always be. Reggie Bullock is a legit 3D guy in the NBA right now. He's got R.J. Barrett with the work he's put in behind the three-point line on the cusp of superstardom, like really soon. And the dude's 20. That's not even speaking for what he's done for Julius Randle's game, the confidence that he's put in him. It's been absolutely amazing. Where guys have soured on Tom a little bit in the approach is that once they've gotten paid, like, well, now he got me paid, I can have him lean on me less. Tom's never going to lean on you less. He expects a particular level out of you at all times, a particular intensity that he brings to his job, and that he expects you. Don't want you to, doesn't hope you do what he expects you to bring to your job. But that's what's happened with the Knicks this year. And one of the great things about the Knicks is how they've managed to take some of the young guys they like a lot and weave them into the fabric of this team. Now, obviously, Barrett is a name that's going to be a star player sooner rather than later for this team. But even a guy like Obi Toppin that people in New York were totally down on, Tom's given him a consistent role. He's the backup four. When he's had injuries to the five, he hasn't moved him to the five. He wants him to develop. Toppin has gotten better in that role behind Randle, played well for them. Emmanuel Quickley's been one of the best rookies in the league this year. He's been phenomenal, Dan. And again, it's just putting him in the right role, having him come off the bench with Rose after they traded for Rose so quickly, didn't have to worry about playmaking, and they could take advantage of his superior shooting. It's just stuff like that. And so Tom's done an amazing job there. It's just, you know, they're capped in how far they could go based upon talent. And to me, it's a fair case to say the Knicks are the best of the rest in the Eastern Conference, but they're not in the category of either of those top three teams, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Milwaukee. That said, if I'm any of those three teams, I don't want to play the Knicks in a playoff series because I'm not going to come out of it whole. I'm going to come out of it bruised and battered. That's who the Knicks are.
You mentioned LeBron returning from injury, and he's really sounding different now. And he's saying things like something to the effect of, I'm not sure my body is ever going to quite come back to what it was. And I don't know if he's sort of playing like Scotty on Star Trek, where it's like, Captain, that's going to take me 6 hours at a minimum. And then you'll look good when it ends up being better than that. So I don't know if he's what he knows, and maybe he knows something, and he really does feel good because he is in incredible tune with his body as the care and with which he takes So do you think this is real? Do you think he is telling the truth about never quite being the same, or is it just a matter of semantics and he's going to come back and just unleash hell?
I think it's somewhere in between. I think that there are some doubts with him where his body is right now. I think he feels like at this stage of his career, being transparent with the media is something that he's comfortable doing. So I think he's doing that. I also think that if he can lull some people to sleep in the process and find his burst again, I think that'd make him happy too. So I think it's kind of all those things together right now for him. We know this, Dan. Father Time's undefeated, right? This is a 36-year-old player coming off a title last year on a six-week turnaround from the time they got done playing the finals until they had to show up at training camp and start this season. And at 36, a six-week turnaround, and a guy that was determined early in the year to win the MVP award, so he wasn't sitting games. And I give him all the credit in the world, and I appreciate the pride that he has in his craft, which he didn't always have in his career, frankly. And so I admire the hell out of LeBron for that. With all that said, at 36, coming off this high ankle sprain, it's fair to kind of look at LeBron and think, is he going to be the same guy coming back? And then the other conversation is, do the Lakers need him to be the same guy coming back to be able to go as far as they want to go? You know,
I think they do. I honestly think they do, because AD is just, he's just not an alpha. He's an unbelievably talented player, but for them to be great, LeBron's got to be that guy, because AD doesn't want to be.
But Danny's not an alpha right now. That doesn't mean he never can be an alpha. I agree. He's not an alpha right now. But when they went out and they got him, the whole conversation was, there's going to be a time, sooner rather than later, where there's a transition from LeBron being the alpha to AD being the alpha, and LeBron falls in as AD's lieutenant. That LeBron was going to reach a certain age where that was what had to happen. This may be that time to see if that happens. Now, can Anthony Davis do that here in the playoffs? I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that I lean towards saying that it won't happen this year. Doesn't mean it can't happen in another year or two down the line. Listen, I will tell you this. I don't think this is the Lakers' year. I just don't. I think that you're going to – and the play-in doesn't have as much to do with it as the fact that you're coming out of a 6 seed, a 7 seed, and having to have every series on the road. And I say that with the knowledge that if they end up on the 2-3, 6-7 side of the draw, and they win in the first round, they're not going to have to be on the road in the second round, because they're going to draw the Clippers. Now, think about that. We're actually framing that. The Lakers have put themselves in a spot where playing the Clippers at Staples in a second-round series actually becomes a benefit to them. When have we ever would have looked at that as a benefit to them before everything that happened this season and where they've ended up? So that kind of gives you a little bit of perspective on how far the Lakers have fallen here. Listen, not to say they can't come back and do it all again next year. I think the West is too good. There's too many good teams there. It's too deep, and the Lakers have too high a mountain to climb. Here's what I'll say about the Lakers. I think they're capable of beating anyone. I just don't know that they have enough there this year and enough gas in the tank to be able to beat everyone.
Brian Geltzeiler, last thing for you. Where do we put Russell Westbrook historically now? What has this late career burst done for his legacy all time?
He is one of the 10 greatest point guards ever to play the game. Can we say he's one of the 5 greatest point guards ever to play the game? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, listen, I have 3 right in front of him off the top of my head. Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, and John Stockton. If you want to tell me Steph Curry, because he is announced as a point guard every night, plays the position of point guard, I will put him ahead of Russell Westbrook with ease. Then we look at we start to get into the, Oscar's in that conversation, obviously. And I think you have to look at the era that Oscar played in and what he did to dominate that era. Understand one thing about Westbrook, and I'm not taking anything away from this accomplishment last night and what he's done in his career. It's absolutely incredible. It's a record we thought no one would break, and here he is breaking it. He's also doing it in the pace and space era of the NBA, where the game is being played right now faster than it ever has historically. So when you look, I say that as a frame of reference, Oscar didn't do it where the game was just this fast when he did this. And I think that's important to note. Now, you may want to make the case that the athletes on the floor right now are better athletes and more gifted than when Robertson did it. You probably have a fair case there as well. But I think Westbrook is a second five-point guard all time, closer to 10 than he is to 5. You asked the question, a legitimate question, Westbrook or Jason Kidd? Westbrook or Steve Nash? Westbrook or Oscar? Independent of the record. But these are the guys that he's with. And Westbrook or Chris Paul? Another one that you want to put in there. So that's the group that Westbrook lands himself in. And listen, I people who love Westbrook are going to think that's some kind of insult. I think it's a massive compliment to be say that you're going to be put in historical perspective with Oscar Robertson, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, and Chris Paul. That's not a bad place to be.
No, indeed. Great stuff, Brian Geltzeiler. Thank you, as always.
Always my pleasure, Dan. Talk to you soon, buddy. Take care.
Brian Geltzeiler, follow him on Twitter, at HoopsCritic. Next up, the Midday Midway on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Dan Bernstein solo today and tomorrow before Layla comes back from some time off. The Florida story to end all Florida stories. Next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
Once, twice.
Midway.
The most important of the year.
Three times, four times.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
Nine, ten.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
A little bit of a late start for the Midday Midway today on Bernstein and Rahimi. We started out by just talking football, getting into the whole Aaron Rodgers situation and mentioning that he could end all this if he wanted to, and he doesn't want to because he's enjoying manipulating everyone, his bosses, his teammates, fans. I don't know why this is how he wants to go about his business, but he apparently does. And if this is all overblown and overreported and overassumed, he can just say so, but he's still choosing not to. And that keeps it as real as we can believe it to be. Craig Calcaterra was great as always talking baseball. Brian Geltzeiler on basketball. We always do stories out of Florida because strange things happen in Florida. People are weird there. I know strange people are drawn there. Well, he's been free as a bird for about a month, but Lord help him, that may change. This from Fox 59. Police in Florida are currently asking for the public's help in locating a 38-year-old man accused of stealing a trailer containing what is described as a significant amount of memorabilia connected to Lynyrd Skynyrd. The Southern rock band, whose major hits include Freebird, Tuesday's Gone, and Sweet Home Alabama, and Give Me Three Steps, and Ooh, That Smell, and What's Your Name? I actually like them. The memorabilia, along with the trailer, had disappeared from the parking lot of a Days Inn hotel in Orange Park on April 9th, just one day before the items were intended to be auctioned off at a cancer benefit in Middleburg, Florida. The organizers of the Jimmy Van Zandt Cancer Benefit, named for late musician Jimmy Van Zandt, who was also a cousin of Lynyrd Skynyrd's Donnie, Johnny, and Ronnie Van Zandt, had said that some of the stolen memorabilia included musical equipment, autographed photos, and a 1957 Les Paul guitar signed by Greg Allman, Lita Ford, and many more prominent rock artists. The trailer also held soaps, candles, and glassware to be sold at the benefit, as well as a brand new snare drum that would have been a raffle prize. Altogether, the benefit's organizers estimate they lost $12,000 worth of merchandise and memorabilia. Their charity group on Facebook said, "We had large hopes of making great money at the event. However, without much to sell, we actually lost money." Now, police say they've obtained an arrest warrant for William James Walker, who they believe to be responsible for the theft. And this is how the police wrote this out on their Facebook page. There is a picture of William James Walker, who, judging from the picture, looks like in his high school yearbook, he would be voted most likely to steal a van full of Lynyrd Skynyrd memorabilia. So they're saying Walker is known to live transiently, frequenting different hotels in the Jacksonville area. Walker has praying hands tattooed on his forearm and a spider tattooed on his shoulder. And they give the information to bring Walker to justice with the phone numbers and First Coast Crime Stoppers, etc. But they are saying that people at the Jimmy Van Zandt Cancer Charity said that the benefit was considered a success thanks to supporters who donated their time and money and memorabilia upon hearing of the theft. They are organizing another benefit, and they're looking for to do this in November, according to a recent post. So they see if they can find him. He's known to live transiently, and now he could be driving around with a van full of Lynyrd Skynyrd merchandise. Keep your eyes peeled for William James Walker.
Right now, I'm telling you, this part of Florida, it's scary.
Indeed it is, Herbert Perry. And lastly, real quick, today is National Eat What You Want Day. I kind of need a ruling on this, because I guess if that's the case, I've been doing it wrong. Because I always thought that life was too short to eat anything other than what you want.
Or as I call it, day.
Right, it's day ending in Y. I guess I genuinely don't get it. I think eating what you want isn't the same as eating as much of everything as you always want, or being an idiot, or stuffing yourself. I mean,
it's not.
I mean, you can always eat what you should eat what you want. That's the fun of it. I like to wake up every day and know and get excited and sort of fetishize what I want for dinner.
Fetishize is a strong word, but yeah, I'm with you otherwise.
Well, I use that just because I like, it's got to be right. Like, for me, everything, like when I order in a restaurant, everything's got to be, it's got to fit exactly what I want. And yesterday I woke up and I knew I wanted a huge plate of Eggs Benedict for dinner. So that's what I made, with my fresh chives from my own garden. And I made six poached eggs and a half a pound of Canadian bacon and hollandaise and one of the Mariano's potato pancakes all on a giant plate. And it was awesome.
Nothing better than breakfast food.
Breakfast for dinner every once
so
in a while.
So great.
But runny poached eggs and hollandaise sauce and salt and chives. And that's why tonight is steak night. And tonight, I'm going to get two of the Michelina's Fettuccine Alfredo, a big handful of frozen peas, and some extra Romano cheese. And that's going to be my side dish. And I'm going to get a giant bone-in ribeye steak. And that's what I'm doing tonight, because it's National Eat What You Want Day.
Fat alert.
And that's the Midday Midway. And Skynyrd will play us out, because Terry Bors is next. He's got thoughts on Bob Baffert. Don't go anywhere. Dan Bernstein with you on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Right now, I'm telling you, this part of Florida is scary.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Morning Show.
Mully
and Hall here.
We're with you every morning on your way to work, live at 5.
We've got the day's biggest Chicago sports stories to start your day off right.
Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And on your device or smart speaker through the Odyssey app.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.